If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
You're listening to Underwater from Alex Kidd in Miracle World, released December 1986, composed by Takahiko Uwabo.
What's up, BG Maniacs? Welcome to another episode of BG Mania, a video game music podcast. I, of course, am your host, Brian. Joining me on the show today, it is slightly 2 years older than this topic, Bedroth.
Slightly three.
Slightly three?
My bad. Gotta get my age. Feeling old and cold today, it is Bedroth, because Texas has not been exempted from the Arctic blast that a lot of the U.S. got this week.
As indeed.
These topics always make me feel old because I'm like, man, I was 4 years old when, 3 or 4 years old when these games came out.
Yep. And the reason we're doing this on this particular day, hopefully if it posts on time, get to that in just a second. Real quick, if you'd be so kind, head on over to Apple Podcast, whichever app you've chosen to listen to us on, drop us a quick rating and a review. Really does help us out in terms of visibility so that the show continues to grow. And remember, we are on Patreon now as well, patreon.com/RPG era. Check out our tiers, see what we're doing, and if you feel inclined, toss us a couple bucks each month. If not, continuing to listen to the episodes as they upload each week, works owners as well. And of course, special shout out to current executive producers, Jexax and Zantku. I am scrolling first off to see if we have any new comments.
Cool. Zantku liked the Alan Wake episode. That's all I saw on Discord.
He said that was definitely a kick-ass awesome playlist, which absolutely. Dan hoping we do an exclusive Call of Duty BG Mania episode. Probably not going to happen.
When you said the Alan Wake one was maybe one of your favorites we'd ever done, he was like, oh, so you finally did the call. Yeah.
We do have a new comment. I read that one somewhere on Anchor. There is a new comment. It's from a while ago. Pikmin 4.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Shout out to Kiefer. Dropped a comment 6 days ago. Pikmin good.
Pikmin good.
Pikmin indeed. Good.
Shukapow would definitely agree with you. Go check out her YouTube channel where there's a lot of Pikmin stuff. Shukapow agree. If you think Pikmin good, you will like her YouTube channel.
That's too many words. You got a caveman talk like Seven I were doing in Discord earlier.
I'm old. I ramble. Bedroth ramble lots. I mean, everybody who listens knows that.
That's true. Yeah.
It's a podcast. What else am I going to do if I don't talk?
Pikmin good. Thank you for the comment.
Yes, thank you, Kiefer.
That it was the
I
only...
I wonder if that's the Kiefer. What do you think? You think Jack Bauer listens to our podcast?
Kiefer Sutherland? Yeah, probably not.
I could see Jack Bauer talking like that.
And about
I couldn't really picture him playing Pikmin.
I was going to say, about Pikmin? But, yeah, exactly.
He'd probably be more alliance with Dan talking about Call of Duty.
That's true. That's true. 1986. Why are we doing that topic today? Well, if this posts on time, which should, right? Because as of time of recording, it's January 16th. I've already halfway edited the Rare Composer episode, which will have uploaded before you hear this. So it doesn't matter that I say that.
Mm-hmm.
But if this posts on time next week on January 24th, that is my birthday. And I was born in 1986. So I thought, why not? Let's do a 1986 focus. It's been a while since we focused on just a specific year. We tend to do just like one per year. It seems to be the average, but not even one per year because we've done less than how many years BG Mania has been going. So we've not done too many just year focuses. And it's always interesting going back that far, right? Like, that's almost 40 years ago.
Yeah, it's... I was actually kind of amazed at how much music I found from 1986.
There's a lot. And
there is. There
a
is.
Lot of good stuff.
Yeah. Now, if we ever go back to 1982, that's going to be more challenging, I think.
Yeah, because even, like, Martin Galway didn't get started until 1983. I think.
But I will say, a lot of the computers, a lot of the systems that I brought today were already in use in 1982. So
they were, yeah. You definitely spread things out in terms of the platforms you focused on.
I did. I do what I like to do. I spread spread things out, shared the love, and I gave myself more work to do because this stuff is fun. I like doing this stuff.
Oh, this should be a fun episode. Sad for me, right? Because I'm 38 years old now. Knocking on 40's boo-hoo. Door. Knocking on death's door. Make sure. Oh, dude,
door.
What a good song. particularly the Guns N' Roses version. But call your local funeral parlor. Book my spot. I'm probably on my way there soon. This should be a fun episode, though.
Yes. Yes, it should. And I know it's early right now, but happy birthday, bud.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Opening track was yours.
Yeah. Opening track. The first system of the episode is the Sega Master System, which, as we almost, I think we say it every time we play a track from here, not the best.
Not the best.
Sound chip. But,
not the best.
But for composers who knew how to use it and play to its strengths, it was pretty good when it came to melody. If you didn't try to do something too complex or something that had a bass line, then you were doing okay. And Underwater from Alex Kidd in Miracle World has that sort of, you know, laid back, chill, but still kind of bright and happy feel that the Alex Kidd, the games, I think, are pretty well known for. This was composed by Takahiko Uwabo, who has, like, maybe the most fun to say last name of any composer that we talk about. It stayed on the list. This is, just to give everybody, I think, an idea, this is probably the most popular or most remembered game on my playlist today.
That's very true, actually.
most
Which
of the
is
other
crazy,
stuff.
Crazy, dude. Absolutely crazy
I
as
mean,
well.
It's from systems that really only people who are like super into retro systems or super into video game music ever really talk about. And they're from games that were oftentimes ported to more popular systems, but even then, they really aren't that talked about. But this one stayed on the list because it's got a different sound than a lot of my other tracks, and Sega Master System compared to the other things that were around in 86, like the NES, the stuff that we remember, it's still a little bit less, you know, it was less popular for sure than the NES.
Oh, absolutely it was, yeah. Underwater, right? We have to listen for the usual underwater elements that make it a true underwater theme. And this track, even back in 1986, still has that, right? Like you still get, I don't know what it is about the instruments that like makes me think bubbles. Maybe it's just because I know this is an underwater track, but elements of some of the stuff that like the sound channels and the instruments that are being used here, it kind of sounds like bubbles. Yeah. And maybe it's like that simulated snare, kind of, but not really.
Yeah, yeah. It got kind of a sizzle thing going on there. I think that first section, the it's got like, it's playing, I don't know if that's parallel thirds, but it's parallel something. And I think that having those two channels played at the same time does have sort of a bubbly sound to it. And then when you get to the second part, there's kind of a warble in there. It's kind of wavery a little bit. And
makes
so that
it
also
sound underwater.
Makes it sound underwater for right. Sure. Yeah, yeah. So some good work here by Takahiko Uwabo. This was the first Alex Kidd game, and it did come out first for the Sega Master System. And as everything that we brought today, it came out in North America first in 1986.
Or just if it was exclusive to Japan or something right. Like that. Like original release year 1986, generally, except for something that came out like Zelda, I wouldn't have counted because that did release in 86 in Japan, but 88 here in North America.
Right, yeah. And for mine, like I mentioned, a lot of mine were ported to other systems, but these were all, the ones that you're going to be hearing were all the originals. And I will mention while we talk about the tracks, what system each one came from. And we got a couple of names on here that are kind of well known, but no big superstars, which 1986 was a pretty big year. There were a lot of franchises that are still around today that
I thought you meant like in composer names. I was like, what are you talking about? Have you seen my list?
But I have not seen your list.
In terms of games, you're right. I actually don't have any popular games either.
But yeah, it's I was actually just thinking about the fact that my list doesn't have any big composer or any big game names because we're talking about Dragon Quest came out for the first time. Mm-hmm. Metroid came out in 1986.
It did.
Like you said, Zelda came out in Japan in 1986. And there were some big stuff that started this year.
There was, absolutely. But I definitely brought bigger composers. I brought bigger composers for sure. But again, what is my most popular game I brought? Probably, well, I have no idea. None of mine.
We can talk about it when we get there. We'll see.
Probably the most popular one's my Nintendo track, but it's only popular in Japan.
Mm-hmm. I have to give a shout out. There is one game that didn't quite make it to my list. I would have put it in place of the Alex Kidd game, except when I got to the point where I thought I could leave off the Famicom or NES, because I was positive you were going to bring something from the Famicom or NES.
Of course.
I was like, okay, yeah, I'll go ahead and dump this. The game is I Am a Teacher, and in Japanese, it's sometimes called Super Mario No Sweater. It was a simulation game that taught you how to knit a Super Mario Brothers sweater.
That's it? That's all it was?
That's it, yeah. So you had to knit a sweater. And did the music Koji is Kondo pretty chill, though. That? It's what you would expect. No, not at all. It doesn't sound like Mario at all.
It's like that CES. Did you see the CES Mario that was in Vegas earlier this month? It was at, I think it was promoting Target. And the
yes, I did
voice
see that.
Was
oh
like a Russian dude, like...
Like deep
so
voice,
crazy.
Like
yeah.
It was the most random thing.
Oh my god, it was amazing. It was absolutely incredible.
It was so cool.
Nintendo was probably so pissed about that.
Probably so. There was also, I almost brought the underwater track from, I can't remember the name, but Super Mario Mega or Super Mario Special or something like that. Mm. But it was on the PC-88. It was a bootleg Super Mario game on the PC-88. And they sound like the original Mario tracks, but just slightly different because the PC-88 had different hardware. So I almost brought the underwater version of that, but then I decided to bring this one because we've already heard underwater. So
that's true. That would have been cool, though. I'll have to go check that out. I've never heard that. I'll have to hear the like what it sounds like kind of different. So
I also realized that on the website that we use sometimes for downloading video game music, you can search by year.
You can. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can search by a lot of things.
That was very helpful.
You can search by a lot
yes.
of things, which is really cool. So, yeah, I actually use that quite
that
a bit.
That was very helpful. cool. I also utilized the playlist function on that site for the first time putting this one together.
Yeah,
because
that was
a
neat.
Couple of, yeah, like at least half of my tracks, the version that we're picking from is not on YouTube. Like people just don't upload music from those systems to YouTube very often.
Yeah, very rare. Very, very rarely. Yep. Well.
Yeah, I am excited, though, to see what you brought. So you want to get into your first block?
Let's do that. This block should be pretty good, I would say. I think, Bedroth, you will particularly, I'm sure you've heard it. I know you're a massive fan of the beeper. But I think you'll like this block, particularly this middle track. Let's kick things off by taking a listen to Music One from The Goonies. This released on February 21st, 1986, and it was composed by Satoi Terashima. Coming up next, we're going to take a listen to Title from Agent X in the Brain Drain Caper. This released sometime in 1986, and it was composed by Tim Fallon. We'll be right back. Closing out this block, we're going to take a listen to the main theme from Alpha. This released on July 8th of 1986, and it was composed by Nobuo Uematsu. Coming back in, we are first talking about Music One from The Goonies. Again, this released on February 21st, 1986. The earliest game that actually has an actual release date, right? I don't know about the ones that just came out in 1986 because I have no idea. But in terms of like my list and your list, physical dates that I can confirm, this is the earliest one that we have from 1986, which also why I put that at the beginning. Composed by Satoi Terashima, the only probably not big name composer I have on my list.
Yeah, I know I've heard this name, but I wouldn't know it if it hadn't been for, you know, the fact that I'm a VGM podcaster.
Right.
He doesn't have a lot to his name.
She.
He was an early, she does not have a lot to her name. She's an early Konami composer, obviously, but
yeah,
and
they,
you can hear that early Konami sound.
They did not credit her in most of the games she worked on, by the way. So
yeah, this predated the Kakeha Club.
Yeah, we don't know what games she actually worked on, except for a couple. We know she helped on Castlevania for the NES and Simon's Quest, so those were like her biggest games. But the Goonies,
that's where I know her name from, because she's mentioned alongside Keiji Yamamoto and stuff.
Yep, but the Goonies she did by herself. And the sequel.
This is solid.
I think.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. The sequel to The Goonies that only came out on video game consoles.
Yes.
Oh, man. That's so wild. But yeah, this is a really solid track, especially, again, for the time period. But you can hear that early Konami sound. I was talking about the bass line. That it's not the Konami bass that we remember from later after they developed some of their more advanced sound chips.
Right.
Yeah, it's not Castlevania, it's not Contra, you know, not the Ninja Turtles.
But it's solid. It's actually, and it's it's not long, right? It's kind of a relatively short loop, right around 50 seconds, but it's a memorable melody. I never played this game, but I feel like I've heard this track. I don't know if this is like music arranged from the movie, but I feel like I've heard this melody before. And that could just because it's so recognizable.
Yeah, it is. It's just got one of those melodies that's, it makes you feel like you've heard it before, I think.
Because yeah.
I had the same thought, but I can't think of when I would have ever heard this before.
I can't possibly have ever played this game, but maybe I did as a child and I just don't remember.
Maybe some YouTuber uses it for an intro.
It's
possible. It would make for really good intro music for, you know, segments and things like that. So, but yeah, I love the title screen with the silhouettes of all the characters.
It's so good.
I think that combined with the sound of this track, it's really nostalgic.
God love the Goonies.
Oh yeah, God love the Goonies.
Oh man. Then we got to the middle track, which you had heard before. Right? Kind of a relatively well-known beeper track from Tim Fallon. That was the title from Agent X in the Brain Drain Caper that released sometime in 1986. And yeah, what a freaking god, Tim Legend. He's a legend too, but Tim Fallon.
Tim Legend.
Yeah, Tim might as well Tim just change Legend his Fallen. Last name at this point, or just start calling him Tim Legend Fallon, because this dude, 1986, on a beeper. This sounds good. Like, it's noise, right? But it sounds good.
The beeper had a noise channel, and Fallon was able to develop a kit that he could use that could basically add on extra voices to that single noise channel.
Right.
It's great. I mean, that's why everything is coming through.
We've not played too many beeper tracks on this show before. There's only been like one or two, and I think you brought them.
Yeah,
both.
Even when we did our Spectrum episode.
Yeah.
Because the beeper is not...
This is a specky track, of course, yes.
Yeah. The beeper is not fun to listen to. It usually sounds like hot garbage. And it was really like wildly innovative for the time. And a lot of composers kind of cut their teeth on that specky beeper. But
nobody liked Tim Fallon.
Yeah, only the really advanced ones. And nobody could do it like Tim Fallon. He was just a wizard when it came to sound programming. And then making that sound like real music.
Yeah, there's a melody
there,
in
this, parts of
this
track.
There's a melody.
Yeah, there is.
And
I was sitting here bobbing my head to it.
Yeah. Anybody that walks in, looking at us, listening to this and just sitting here like swaying back and forth, and they would think we were nuts, dude. But it's good.
Yep, absolutely. It is. And especially when the track wraps up, there's a part where it plays this lick that it just sounds like an electric guitar, like a wailing electric guitar. And it's amazing. And you can still hear those telltale like clicks and beeps that the beeper was known for.
Yeah, I mean, that was
uses
hardware
them, like,
at the time. Right.
Yeah.
He implemented that into the actual track, which is crazy.
Yeah, and Agent X and the Brain Drain Caper, I think it was actually from that Specky episode that I remember hearing this, because I think it was on my shortlist for the beeper tracks I brought, because it sounds so good. And it wasn't quite as good to me as whatever I did end up bringing, would have been the only reason I didn't bring it, but... this is kind of a wild looking game. It looks like kind of a point and click style,
yeah,
which I think there were a lot of on these early computers. But you're like this sci-fi sort of secret agent or detective type dude, which you can kind of get from the title. And you're going from room to room and finding clues to solve mysteries. And I could just imagine, you know, a kid getting this because it sounded like, you know, a decently fun game to play.
Booting this
and
up.
And then booting it up and hearing this.
Just
and losing their friggin' mind.
Blown away, right? Hair blown back from the TV speakers at full blast.
Yeah, turning it up full blast, and their parents coming in like, what in God's name are you listening?
What is that devil's music? Brian, turn that off. Oh, no, sorry, that was your life again.
If you
again,
play
my
that
bad.
Backwards, play that backwards, will you summon Lucifer into our sitting room?
That's
okay,
pretty,
I'm going to stop
that's
now.
That's pretty good.
Sorry, Seb.
That was pretty good. That was a good accent. That was pretty good.
Yeah, I can do an accent or two. Yeah, man, this is just wild, fuck wild, and yeah, first big name, definitely not the last one. You've got some legendary names.
Yeah,
all
the rest
list.
Of mine are well known composers that we've definitely talked about extensively on this show, including my third track. That was an early Square Enix game. We took a listen to the main theme from Alpha, released July 8th, 1986. This one done by Nobuo Uematsu. And I think you could tell right away, like, those, you know, you call it the five-finger whatever fanfare.
Five-finger fanfare, yeah.
But that's...
This is definitely a Japanese composer.
Absolutely. And you can hear the Final Fantasy in this, right? Because this is real early. This is relatively early. But you can already hear elements of like what would eventually start becoming the Final Fantasy soundtrack throughout the, especially early initial trilogy, 1, 2, and 3. You can hear a lot of that in this main theme with Alpha, which is a PC.
Yeah, the
track.
Arpeggios leading up to the sustained notes. And yeah, I was not aware that Uematsu had worked on the PC-88, which is interesting because I had this track on my shortlist. It was bumped for one of the tracks in my next block just because of, in the moment, the other track, I thought I liked it better in the mix of my tracks, but this is a really, really good one. And an actual
song too, right? It has a beginning and an end.
Yes.
Which we did mention.
It has a beginning and an end.
I believe this is based on an anime. Yes. I don't remember the actual name of the anime. It's not.
Huh, okay. It just looks like it. You got the anime girl with the big 80s hair.
Yeah.
And, you know,
it's
on the cover.
An interactive fiction and eroge, of course.
Okay, so this is an eroge visual novel. Didn't know Uematsu worked on those either.
Also,
it makes sense.
This is one of his earliest soundtracks, right? So this is one of the first things he ever did.
The PC-88 was well, and still is well known for those kinds of games. So I can't say I'm super surprised, but... Might be hearing a couple more of those types of songs in an upcoming episode.
Oh, yeah, I think so. This game, Alpha, was praised at its release for its animation quality and the rich facial expressions of its characters. There was a prison sequence that is repeated multiple times throughout the game, which became notorious among fans because it depicts the lead character, her name is Chris, naked.
Okay, well, there you go. But this is such a nice song. It does not make me picture a scene like that.
But it could just, now.
You know, it's very, very nice. It's very peaceful. It's a really good palate cleanser. It's like if that Tim Fallon beeper track was just like a strong shot of Scotch whiskey, then this is that, you know, that glass of red that you drink afterward to wash it down.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I like this one a lot.
That's pretty good. I do too.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously I'm a big fan of Uematsu, so getting to explore something relative, I'm actually shocked because we've done a focus on him, right? And we usually pull like a few things from early on. This is the first track we've ever played from this game, so, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, it is. It's cool. I'm really glad you brought this. It was a very solid block.
You said you had this on your list.
It was, yeah, and it was bumped, like I said, for one of the tracks coming up in my next playlist, actually, the second.
Yep.
Just because, again, in the mix of the other tracks I had, I thought it fit a little better, and just in general, I liked it a little bit more than this, but, you know, who knows? That might change tonight. I might be like, man, why didn't I bring it? But now you got to bring it, so now I got to have both.
Yeah, but actually, that track you bumped it for is in this next block.
It is. Well, yeah, let's go ahead and get into it then. We're not going to start with that one, though. We're actually going to start things off in my first block with main BGM 1 from Golf Force, Defense of Chaos, which is based on an anime. This game was released in 1986, and it was originally composed by the anime composer, which we'll talk about when we come back, but the arranger composer for this game is Hideki Kanazashi. Thank you. Next up, we're going to listen to Menace of Welder, BGM 2, from Final Zone, released May 1986 and composed by Nobuhito Koise. And closing out my first block, we're going to listen to Title Screen from BMX Simulator, released in 1986 and composed by David Whittaker. Coming back in, we're first talking about Main BGM 1 from Gulf Force Defense of Chaos. Once again, this was released in 1986, and do you still have the original composer's name up?
No, I don't. I know
that
he...
Ichizo Seo was the composer for the anime, but according to the VGM Video Game Music Preservation Foundation, VGMPF, there is a credit out there somewhere for Hideki Kanazashi of HAL Laboratory, who worked on The Adventures of Lolo and Air Fortress and some other stuff, and on the same team as the guys who made Kirby. And so we've got him down as the composer for the game.
It sounds like that, right? Like, even mentioning HAL Laboratory. Yeah, because, I mean, a lot of this actually even sounds like some early HAL games.
And I think from what I gathered, Gulf Force is like a space-based sort of sci-fi property. I don't know that for sure, but I think I remember just from the screenshots and stuff I saw when I was doing
research. Did you say this was developed by HAL, or was it developed by somebody else?
As far as I know, it was not developed by HAL, but you know what? I'm going to look into it a little bit.
I'd just be curious if it was, because it does sound similar to, like, even elements of it kind of remind me of... Was it HAL? So it was developed by HAL.
Yeah,
okay.
It was developed by HAL Laboratory.
I was going to say, because it does even sound like some of the early Kirby games in some areas. Like this part here where like, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, like that reminds me of some of the areas in some of the like Kirby's Adventure. I've never heard this before. I think this is a really cool track. I really like what's going on in the background too. It's kind of unnoticeable, but like there's some notes that are just warbling around there, kind of like bouncing together, and it creates this cool sound. I don't know. I like it.
Yeah, it's cool. It's got some very distinctive parts to it, and good use of the noise channel for the percussion here. This is a space shooter type game. Some planet-based, some space-based, but...
You said this was MSX,
definitely
right?
Was HAL Laboratory. Yes, this was on the MSX, thank you. On the MSX.
Oh, you didn't say
and
that. Okay, maybe you said that off-air.
Maybe, but the fact that this is... HAL Laboratory, I think even more cements that Hideki Kanazashi was involved somehow. But
I think that's
this
a safe
was
bet.
The only Gulf Force game that was developed by HAL Laboratory. After this, for the MSX2, there was a game, Gulf Force Eternal Story, that was done by Scap Trust, and then there were two more that were never released, Gulf Force Raging Chaos and Gulf Force Beyond the Rainbow, which were also done by Scap Trust.
Okay.
And apparently this was a moderately popular anime back in the 80s.
It's not one I'm familiar with either. Like, I've never heard of this, even as an IP. Never heard of it.
But, you know, if they made that many games after it, I mean, you know, look at the stuff they made games for over here, though. So
that's true.
You never know.
Yeah, you never know.
That was the MSX. And then we move on to my PC-88 game, the one that bumped that
Alpha. I really like this, dude. This is dope. I see why you bumped
it.
Yeah,
man.
I like this a lot.
This sounds like nothing else on my playlist, and it's just, I love the, it's, the danger is like visceral in
this
track.
What's the first thing I asked you? Is this a horror game?
Yeah. Yeah. Talking about main BGM, no, The Menace of Welder, BGM2 from Final Zone, released in May of 1986, so about halfway through the year. This was composed by a name I don't know, Nobuhito Koise. But and I imagine that Welder must be like a bad guy in this game. This is a top-down run-and-gun style shooter, kind of like Commando, the Capcom game for the for the arcade. And it's I don't know anything about any of this.
I
do know that Final Zone was
this
apparently
was eventually
a trilogy
ported to like Genesis too, wasn't it? I think I remember
that
this
was
game
actually
on
one of the sequels.
Was it? Oh, okay.
This one, yeah, this one was Japan only. It is sometimes called Final Zone Wolf because Wolf Team developed this one. That is the team that was eventually bought by Namco and went on to be the Tales of machine.
Yeah, much more popular than Final Zone.
Yep. This must have been before guys like Yasunori Mitsuda and Motoi Sakuraba were involved with Wolf Team games.
Yeah.
Either that or they were just working on different stuff than this. But the... Let me see here. Other games by Nobuhito Koise. It looks like he worked on a game called Emerald Dragon with some other composers. A game called Legion for the TurboGrafx CD. That actually has some good music. He's on there with several other composers, though. Not a whole lot. Digital Devil Story, Megami Tensei. He worked on with Shinobu Ogawa.
Okay. So, yeah, an early Atlas game.
So, yep. Also on the PC-88s. But, yeah, so a little bit. Not too much. But, yeah. I also really like this track.
Yeah, this is dope. This is super cool.
It's really... There's a lot going on in this track for the PC-88, I think. And
it kind of... Because when you think PC-88 and a lot going on, usually I tend to think Falcom. And I do hear a lot
Falcom
of that
Koshiro
here, too.
Or both.
Yeah, absolutely. Yuzo Koshiro for sure. Yep.
And I don't think Koshiro was composing yet in 1986. By him.
I don't. And he's somebody that I should have looked up. He does.
So I don't remember from...
Looking it up? Yeah, he has two in 1986.
Man.
That's okay.
That's crazy.
That's okay.
That's fun. I'm sure we'll have them at some point. But yeah, it's...
I, for whatever reason, didn't look because I didn't think he did. I thought he started in 87. But yeah, that's my bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We know he started young. So It's like our pal Barry, you know, getting in there when you're like 15, 16.
Yeah, absolutely. Why not? If you got the chops and you can do it, do it.
And speaking of Barry and composers further west, we're going to move on to, that was totally accidental, by the way. I'm not going to give myself that much credit. Moving on to a track by David Whitaker, one of two names that I think some people might recognize on my list. This is the title screen from BMX Simulator. And the reason that I brought this one, there were some tracks that I bumped that I think were maybe objectively more enjoyable to listen to and were longer, a little more complex, but this is from the Atari 8-bit. I think when we were talking, I mentioned the Apple II, which was totally wrong on that. This is from the Atari 8-bit. And the 8-bit series, I think, was the successor to what we think of when we say, you know, the Atari, like the 2400 or whatever it was.
2600, yeah.
The 2600, yes, thank you. The Atari 8-bit, I think, was the next series of Atari computers.
So that was like before the 5200 or whatever it was called?
Yeah, somewhere in between there. So, but I feel like this had some of the same, it sounds like it had the same, a similar hardware structure to the ZX Spectrum.
Yeah, I even mentioned like the beep going on. Yeah, which may, mm-hmm, I'm not sure, but that beep David Whitaker might be using to simulate the bass drum, because it is opposite the snare drum.
It is, but it's in an odd place for it. It feels like they're switched.
Yeah, it does.
It sounds like a clave, like those little wooden cylinders that percussionists click together that you hear in a lot of Spanish music.
Yeah.
But that's really just because of what it is and that, you know, why it sounds like that. But yeah, BMX Simulator. I can't imagine how immersive that must have been on the Atari 8-bit.
It's like playing E.T., right? You just got this, like, oh, man, I'm so immersed. And then fast forward 40 years, right? And we have VR and AR and simulator games for literally anything you could possibly fucking think of.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, David Whitaker, big-time composer on the C64, the Amiga, did quite a few things for Atari systems as well. He has a lot of tracks credited to his name.
Oh, he absolutely does, yeah.
Yeah. And he was working up into like the mid to late 90s, still doing stuff for like the Amiga and stuff like that. Never really crossed over into Nintendo systems or anything like that. And he apparently also, he was either freelance or worked for different developers. He was, some of the biggest names probably were Shadow of the Beast on the Amiga. Let me see. You got compositions like Glider Rider, Storm, and Armageddon Man on the Commodore 64. But he worked on a lot of different computers, too. He worked on the MSX. He worked on the Speccy. And so after working about 8 years in the U.S. for Electronic Arts at Redwood Shores, he joined British video game developer Traveler's Tales, and working as head of audio in September 2004. So still working, but more behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Or at least he was, you know, 20 years ago.
Traveler's Tales, didn't they make some of, like, the... What games did they make? What were they popular for? I know that studio.
Yeah, I know that name as well. Let me look and see.
I wanted to say that's
the TT games, like the Lego games.
Is that Lego? Oh, okay.
That's Traveler's Tales, yeah. It's a subsidiary of TT games.
Yeah, they guess they do make the Lego games. Okay. I don't know why I was thinking of My Sims for some reason.
He did, and they did, let me see, Super Monkey Ball Adventure... They worked on Crash Bandicoot. Yeah, lots of some Disney games, Mickey Mania.
I think I knew that he was there, but I had forgotten. Like, until you said that, I had forgotten he was working there.
Yeah, I think that I might have heard that at some point, too. I don't really know. Honestly, Whitaker is not one that I know as much about compared to guys like Rob Hubbard and even Ben Daglish and, you know, Martin Galway.
Names we're going to hear soon.
Barry Leach.
Not a name we'll hear soon, but unfortunately. Yeah. I looked. He actually had nothing in 1986. He is a name I looked up.
Okay, cool. But we'll get you next time, though, Barry. We'll see.
Yep. We'll get you back in there. Don't worry.
We'll get you back in there.
I think he had something in 87, though. I think the 87 was his first year. I don't know what I used to look.
Look at that. I saw him pop up on your screen.
Yeah.
What a cool guy. I really hope I can make it up there to have a beer with him someday.
That'd be fun.
At that restaurant.
See, he had a couple things. Like, he had one game, but it was like an arranged version of Graham Marsh's Detergent for ICUPS on the Commodore 64 in 1986. But
okay.
I didn't really count that because it's just an arranged version of somebody else's track. So his first stuff was an
88. And he might not have been super happy about us bringing that because he was really down on his earliest stuff.
Right.
When we interviewed him. But I wonder what, Barry, if you're still out there listening, any stories with David Whitaker? Did you ever cross paths with him? I'd be curious to know. But yeah, so that was my first block. I got a little MSX, some PC-88s, and some Atari 8-bits.
Good block. This episode's going to probably move a little quicker because the music is shorter than we've been bringing as of late.
And since we don't know the games as well, we won't have quite as That's much true. To say about some of this.
That's true. I can't talk about the old Gods of Asgard for 55 minutes straight.
Yeah, right. I did not expect to get halfway through the episode and have the PC-88 be the only machine that we've talked about more than once.
I think that's about to change.
I was going to say, I'm sure that'll change.
Yeah, because I do have two tracks from the NES in my next block.
Yeah, there we go. Well, I'm looking forward to it, seeing what you brought.
Sounds good. Let's get to it. Before we get to those NES tracks, we are going to make a stop at the Commodore 64, though. Let's kick things off with this block by taking a listen to the Miami Vice theme from Miami Vice. This released sometime in August of 1986, and it was composed by Martin Galway.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Coming up next, let's take a listen to Title from Medulla no Tsubasa, released December 18th, 1986, composed by Naoki Kodaka. Thank you. Closing out this block, let's take a listen to Castle Town from the mysterious Murasame Castle. This released on April 14th of 1986, and it was composed by Koji Kondo. Coming back in, we are first talking about the Miami Vice theme from Miami Vice, again released sometime in August of 1986. This one done by Martin Galway, someone we've actually heard from quite a bit over the last couple weeks and months.
Yeah,
been on a few episodes.
Really been creeping in.
Yeah, you mostly know, from you. I snuck him in this time.
Yeah, but I mean, after some of the stuff we've listened to, it's like, how did we not, you know, how did we not discover this guy?
He's a name that he's one of the first ones I looked up for, like, what did he have in 1986, right? He's one of the first ones I looked up.
Yeah. And we caught him while he was at Ocean with this game.
Absolutely. Yeah, this was an Ocean game developed by a studio by the name of Canvas, which I'm not super familiar with who they are.
Yeah.
But this is...
Yeah, I'd asked you about that because it sounds like some of the Sega arcade stuff.
It does.
With some of those like sweeping guitar-ish sounds.
I don't know if this is like the actual Miami Vice theme, though. I can't say that I'm familiar enough with that show to know if this is loosely based on that theme, but I feel like it could be.
Yeah. I feel like it could definitely at least, you know, like invoke that theme if it's not specifically that.
Right.
But... I wonder why it's got the little two in parentheses after it. Was this a sequel to a different version or something? Or
no, so there's only two tracks on this game. So this is the second one.
Oh, it's the number one and number two.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. That makes sense for a C64 game. But it's so good, and I love how he's got, again, that electric guitar sound that sounds like, you know, some electric guitar like Fallen did on the beeper.
Yeah.
Maybe not as technically impressive as what Fallen did on the beeper, but man, it still sounds great.
Yeah, I mean, the Commodore 64 sound chip, I think, was significantly more advanced than the beeper too, though. So
it was. And that SID chip is legendary. There are still a lot of people composing on that today in the demo scene.
Yep. Yep. And I do believe this is a SID chip version that we listen to. Because, I mean, if you look up some of the tracks, right, there are SID versions and non-SID versions of the tracks available. We were kind of discussing the keys, though, on the Commodore 64 keyboard. And
yeah, you noticed that the number keys have colors on like the inside facing the player, and that some of the letter keys have like some weird combinations. All the letter keys have, these weird shape combinations. Yeah. And neither of us know why.
I want to know why.
We never owned a Commodore. And if anybody out there knows, I know we've got some listeners over across the pond. If anybody knows what those other symbols are for on the Commodore 64 keyboard, the ones on the front of the keys, please let us know, because we're curious, but we're not curious enough to look it up ourselves.
Yeah, I'm not curious enough to actually do the research, but I'm looking around on, I mean, granted, this isn't a full screenshot of the keyboard we can see here, right? But like, I do see a run stop key. Obviously, there's a shift, so holding down shift and maybe hitting those keys would do something with the shapes or the colors, but I don't see how that could be implemented like gameplay-wise. But I do know the Commodore was capable of other things. So, like, was this a way to also just interact with the system, right? Like, did you need access to
programming
keys
or something?
Right. Did you need those colors for something? I have no idea.
Yeah. I'd be curious to know, like, the logic to the different symbols, because there is obviously something there.
Every key is different, too. Every key is different.
Yeah. So
the keys next to them are slightly, like, just mirrored, though. You know what I mean? Like, so look at Q.
Mm-hmm.
There's a line going down the middle pointing to the right, and then a circle that's filled in. W, the line is pointing to the left, and the circle is see-through. Like, each key next to it, it mirrors the one to the left, which is really weird.
It is. It is. And I am curious to know what's going on there. But this track is great, though, dude. I really, really enjoy it.
Super dope.
This.
Yeah. The other track from this game is very lengthy. It's the title theme. Mm-hmm. This is like the main music that plays in the actual game, and the other one is just the title theme. It's kind of like Parallax, right? It's just Martin Galway just going off for 7 minutes.
Just ripping,
but
yeah.
It wasn't as impressive, I think, as this one was to me in terms of sound. So that's why I went with this one. Way shorter, but I thought this actually sounded better.
Yeah. Yep. I didn't hear the either of these when I was listening through, so I'll take your word for it, but yeah, that's a man that just gave me the idea that one of these days we could do a supersize episode of Beachmania where all the tracks have to be 7 minutes or longer. But man, could you imagine that episode?
Yeah, it's called Alan Wake 2. Go give it a listen.
There you go, dude. Then you got a couple of systems that, well, I would say we're more familiar with, but we're really not, because these are the Japanese versions.
Right, yeah. So then the middle track, we did move to another NES track, and we took a listen to the title theme from Medulla no Tsubasa, which is translated here over in the US as the Wing of Medulla, but not officially calling it that because the game is exclusive to Japan and never released outside of Japan. December 18th, 1986.
Making this technically Famicom, whereas the Goonies was definitely NES, but sound-wise, yes, the two were identical.
Same identical system. But this was composed by one of your favorites, Naoki Kodaka.
Yeah, Naoki Kodaka. Yeah, definitely. This was before Death Sunsoft Base. Yep. So kind of like the Goonies, they hadn't developed their more advanced chip that gave them more power yet. But I'm still always happy to get some Kodaka in my lunch. So.
And we've actually played something from this game before. I don't remember which track, and it may have been on our Kodaka like showcase episode even. I have no idea, but
I wouldn't be surprised. But yeah,
this is relatively short, right? About a minute and a half. But this is a good title track. I like this a lot. And it does, again, reminds me a lot. It's very nostalgic, first of all. Like, some of those classic NES sounds. It's very good. But it doesn't...
It is, yeah, very nostalgic track.
Like you mentioned with the bass, it's not as impressive as some of the later Sunsoft stuff we would hear in a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Like Journey to Silius,
yeah,
for
it's
example.
An opening track. It's very bright. I really like the sound of this. It does have that Kodaka... That almost chimey sound that a lot of Sunsoft games did, even on games like Gimmick that Kodaka didn't work on, you have that particular sound of the square channel.
Yeah.
And I really like that.
Yeah. No idea really anything. Probably like we mentioned before, I have no idea what this game is honestly about outside of what Wikipedia tells me.
Yeah, it looks like a side-scroller.
Yeah, side-scrolling action-adventure game where you play as the kingdom story is set in the kingdom of Batum, which hosted a bird statue known as the Wing of Medulla. So you play as a character known as Lucia, and there's 16 stages in this game.
Cool, very cool.
Yeah, but that's pretty much all I know about the Wing of Medulla, or Medulla no Tsubasa. So the final track of that block, we took a listen to Castle Town BGM from the mysterious Murasame Castle, which again released on April 14th of 1986, composed by Koji Kondo. And I did misspeak before we got to that block. This is not an NES track. This is a Famicom Disk System track, or Family Computer Disk System.
Yeah, which did have, I think, at least one other sound channel
different.
In addition
to
what the NES had. Yeah.
And you can tell this sounds more advanced than normal NES music, right?
Yeah.
But even you
There's
mentioned, you
on.
Can hear Koji Kondo struggling a little bit.
Yeah, to fit everything he wants to fit and make it line up rhythmically with what he wants to do. It's definitely, you know, a limitation of hardware, not a limitation of talent, of course. We're talking about Koji Kondo. But But it, and yet he can still make it sound like what he wants it to sound like. And this is still,
yeah, this still sounds great.
A super recognizable track.
Absolutely. In terms of like the scene and again, like popularity specifically in Japan, this probably is the most recognizable thing we're playing today.
I would say so. And I think even over here, since it has been, you know, featured in
Didn't
Smash.
Didn't it get released?
And
like, maybe not. Did it?
It is, yeah. It is on the Switch Online.
That's right.
At this
point. Yep, it is. So it came out for the 3DS. Eventually, August 7th, 2014, here in North America. But yeah.
Yep, it did.
I'm not counting that.
And you know what's
interesting? This came out in 1986.
Even though this is Koji Kondo, and even though this is on the Famicom Disk System, which is a more advanced system, I think I enjoyed that last track a little more, if I'm just listening for pleasure.
It's, in terms of Naoki Kodaka?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Kodaka track. I think it was just a nicer track. But this one, it's technically still impressive, and just a style I'm not as likely to listen to, but still well done, though. Still well done, and this is an important game in Nintendo's history, for sure.
Absolutely, yeah. It's unfortunate that the Famicom Disk System never made its way over here, but I'm surprised that they didn't do something, even putting it on the SNES, to release this back in the U.S. significantly earlier than they did, because I feel like,
yeah,
it would have been
is
successful.
Perfectly playable.
Yeah, no, I feel like it would have been successful.
I think so, too.
I mean, it's basically Zelda, for the most part.
Yeah, a lot of similarities, for sure.
Yeah, I'm surprised this never came over. I think it would have done well. I know for sure it would have been something that I played back in the day, because Nintendo was my main thing back in the day. So I would have definitely consumed this and probably put a lot of time into it. Not a very robust soundtrack, if you look it up.
Yeah, I know. It's interesting, because I feel like you could have fit a lot more on the FDS, but this was one of the earliest FDS games.
It was.
So,
I think it was the second.
You know, they were still... figuring out what all it could do.
The game was one of the early games released for the system and the second original after the Zelda that came out for the Famicom Disk System.
Yep. Man, now we're 3/4 of the way through the episode and we have heard 2 PC-88 tracks and 2 NES Famicom tracks. And that's it. So still a lot of variety going on here.
Yeah. I think when all is said and done, PC-88 and Commodore 64 will be tied for the most representation on the playlist.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and get into it then.
Yeah, moving right along, man. This is the earliest we've gotten into the last block, I think, in quite some time.
Well, give everybody a little bit of a break after that Alan Wake track, Alan Wake episode. But yeah, all right then. Let's go ahead. Speaking of Commodore 64, let's get into the title screen from Arc Pandora, released March of 1986, and composed by Anthony Crowther and Ben Daglish. Thank you. Next up, let's listen to Miss Blue from Valis, the Phantasm Soldier, released December 1986, composed by Shinobu Ogawa. And closing out my second block, we're going to take a listen to OKI Rap from Quartet, released in 1986, composed by Katsuhiro Hayashi. Back in, we are first talking about the title screen from Arc Pandora for the Commodore 64. This was composed by the team of Anthony Crowther and Ben Daglish. Now, Daglish, I know of because of, I mean, he's fairly well known in the C64 scene, but also he was the subject of a very good music episode I did with a friend of mine named Lee Tyrrell, and who is a big fan of Daglish, and actually got to interview him once for his also now defunct podcast, The Sound Test. But fun fact I didn't know about Anthony Crowther, he was a programmer as well as working on the music sometimes, and he and Daglish apparently were kind of a tag team. They formed a pair that they called We Music, WEMUSIC, which stood for We Make Use of Sound in Computers.
That's awesome, actually.
Yep.
That's super cool. This is a fun track, dude. I like this. This is a good title screen, too.
It is.
And you and I were trying to listen for things that kind of sounded like Daglish, because I do think he has a style that's somewhat recognizable if you're familiar with some of the stuff he's done before. Second half of this track really does sound a lot like Ben Daglish.
It's really interesting, and I wonder if they split up the composition of the track, or if it's just that, you know, the second half tended to have more of his influence.
Style, yeah.
But yeah, there's a very clear, like, 8-beat demarcation between the two halves of the track. And starting in that section, it starts to sound like Daglish to
me. Yep, I agree. This is a fun find, though. This is nothing I'd never heard it before. So
same. And I wouldn't have found it if it hadn't been for the, you know, search by year function. And all three of our C64 tracks sound pretty different.
They do.
I'm kind of excited.
Yeah.
Kind of like both of our Famicom tracks sounded pretty different. And, I mean, we'll see about the PC-88s when it's all said and done. But, but yeah, this was a fun track for sure.
I agree. I like this one a lot. Good find.
But you did not like it as much as my next track.
Yeah, that middle track that you brought, probably my favorite thing you brought to the show today. That was excellent.
It's really good. Kind of like my middle track from my last block, it has a very distinctive sound to it. We're talking about Miss Blue from Valis the Phantasm Soldier. The latest game, possibly, on our list, it's from December 1986, and composed by Shinobu Ogawa, who didn't do a whole lot of stuff. He worked on all three of the Valis games, which I think is why I know his name, because at least one other podcast has done a Valis showcase before. But other than that, the only other thing I really recognized that he worked on was he was the other composer, along with, was it Nobuhito Koise?
Yeah.
I believe, who worked on
mentioned earlier.
Digital Level Story.
Yeah.
Shin Megami Tensei.
Kind of cool that we got both of them on here and they both worked on that game. That's neat.
It is. Yeah. Very important game for sure.
Absolutely.
History of games and game music.
Kicked off basically what would become that entire Shin Megami Persona universe. So.
Absolutely. He apparently also worked at least a little bit later in J-pop.
Interesting.
And helped produce a few things.
Okay.
Not he K-pop, was eventually though, huh? After the year 2000 was not K-pop, but was a executive producer on a couple of different things. So yeah, not a lot of stuff I really recognize. But that's Shinobu Ogawa.
I like this,
though. This track, though.
Yeah, dude, I like this track is lot. Fire. This reminds me, I was telling you, of some of the early stuff we hear. Not maybe, like, necessarily the rocking side of Nihon Falcom, but in terms of, like, some of the areas that you... The area music in, like, the early Ease games. This sounds, especially the opening, sounds like it could be, like, walking out into a field in Ease and just getting ready to just battle with some enemies. Like, that's the vibe I get with this. It sounds a lot like Falcom.
Yeah, for sure. And it's interesting that he did the work on this I didn't even mention, this is for the Sharp X1, which, you know, related, but not the same thing as the Sharp X68000. But yeah, that actually predated the X68000. But he worked on Valis games for...
That might be the first time we've ever had PC something 88. From this platform then on the show.
Huh, well, that's two of them, because I don't think we played anything from the Atari 8-bit.
Yeah, I know for a fact we never have. So, yeah, that might be two for one
cool,
there.
Very cool. Well, I mean, it's all because we picked this year, because there were a lot of things in competition around this time.
My mom and dad, I guess, picked this year, but...
Well, there you go. But yeah, he worked on Valis games he actually worked on quite a few games because he was working on lots of different systems. He worked on the MSX, the PC-88, the Sharp X1, of course, NES, the Genesis, the TurboGrafx, and the TurboGrafx CD, the X68000, and he was still working up around the time of the Sega CD. But yeah, no games that I really recognize in all of that. So it must have been a lot of Japanese stuff.
Yeah, stuff we never would have even found out about unless we looked into it.
Apparently worked on a TurboGrafx CD version of Golden Axe. That may be his most popular game, besides Digital Devil Monogatari.
Yeah, so, very cool. I like this a lot.
That leads us...
I'm glad you brought this one.
...into my last track, which was pretty fun.
And then really
after
did
we listened,
that.
we had a little fun listening to some other tracks on the soundtrack, and you dug it.
Yeah, I'd never I had no idea what anything on this game, and I told you that. I didn't think I knew anything, and yeah, I didn't. You had me listen to the title theme, and I listened to a couple others on the soundtrack. This is a really fun one. The one you brought, though,
the game's
specifically.
Called Quartet.
Super fun because of the vocals. not really vocals,
yeah,
but still.
Yeah, yeah. You mentioned that the vocal samples. You mentioned that this was a good track to kind of close out on, not counting the actual closeout. And yeah, those vocals are super cheesy, but I wanted to bring this one because there's actually a couple of tracks on the soundtrack that I like better musically than this, even though, like you said, this is still really good. But I wanted to showcase that this was in 1986.
Yeah. And we're getting these, like, you know, simulated vocals on a track. That's pretty impressive for the time. But this was arcade.
This came out on the, right? It was the Sega System 16 arcade cabinet. And Sega had been doing arcade games since, I think, maybe 1980 is when their first arcade system came out. So they've been doing this for a little while at this point.
Yeah.
And the composer here is Katsuhiro Hayashi, who is one of the, like, seminal Sega composers. He was one of their earliest, if not their earliest, composer. And, in fact, I'm pretty sure he is, because a little fun fact about him. He, when he was still really young, he was basically forced to join choir. And he liked it so much that he watched TV singing shows back. This would have been back in, like, the 60s. Watched TV singing shows and sang along to learn.
Oh, my God. What was the TV show in the 60s, dude? What was the one that the Beatles were on? What was that called?
I don't know, but he watched one called The Best 10.
Ed Sullivan Show, right?
Okay, yeah, the Ed Sullivan Show.
Yeah.
There you go. It was in watching this and listening to some popular music that in junior high school, he became obsessed with Yellow Magic Orchestra.
Another one of those guys.
In high school, he joined a YMO and Cassiopeia cover band.
Much like Hitoshi Sakamoto.
Yep. They were a big deal in Japan, man. That's kind of like the Beatles for video game music composers, yeah. You know? And he, this was his first arcade project, but he did, I believe he was behind the choice of a Yellow Magic Orchestra song for a game called Super Locomotive, which was an early Sega game.
Oh, okay, so, okay, cool.
I could be wrong about that, so anybody out there, please feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but yeah, he's really cool guy. And he's got a few soundtracks that people might recognize. Zaxxon, Hang On. Everybody recognizes Hang On.
Yeah, for sure. That's in Shenmue.
Black Belt, Rambo, First Blood Part 2 for the Master System.
Okay.
Heavyweight Champ and Galaxy Force and Galaxy Force 2. He worked on all of those. So, yeah, there we go. That is my final track of show.
This is the one that you said also potentially influenced, like, early Sonic games in terms of the music. Was that this one?
It's been a little while. It's been a couple of years now, but I found Quartet because I was looking for games that had to do with number 4 for an episode I did to play in the fourth season of Very Good Music. That's how I found Quartet. And I remember looking into it a little bit, and I feel like I heard that Masato Nakamura was a popular musician in Japan who was the composer for the first two Sonic games. And I feel like I remember seeing that he was influenced by Hayashi's work on Quartet when he was putting together, like, the sounds of the Sonic games.
And I could kind of hear that after you told me that, like, certain elements.
Maybe a little bit.
Right? Like, certain elements. I can hear it.
But it could also just be that the Sega System 16 was influential on the sound hardware in the Genesis.
True.
And that's why there are a lot of similar sounds to the Sonic sounds. But yeah, you can definitely tell this is Sega, though.
Oh, absolutely. This does sound like Sega. This is cool, man. I'm glad you introduced me to the soundtrack because outside of this, right, what else is on there? Like FM Funk and the main theme, the ones that I particularly listen to.
Theme.
I'm sure if I go listen to the rest, they're all just as good. This is a cool soundtrack for 1986.
It is. It's really fun. Yeah, and like you said, the 1986, this is really impressive.
Yeah, super cool, man. Good find. Well, good find several years ago, but I'm glad you brought it back for this show.
Yep. Yeah. And yeah, when I saw that Quartet was released in 86, I knew immediately it was going to end up on here somehow.
Nice. So. Very, very cool.
This has been fun, though, dude. I had a lot of fun putting these tracks together, and I heard a lot of stuff I'd never heard before.
Yeah, same. Most of what you brought today I had never heard before, so that was a definite treat for me. I'm glad we did this. Like I said, it just lined up perfectly, right? My birthday being on the usual day that we post these episodes.
Yeah, I'm really glad you
Why
were born,
not?
Dude.
Yeah, me too. We'll see how much longer I'm here for.
Yep, yep. We will see. But I'll tell you, though, you mentioned that Valis track was probably your favorite track of the ones I brought.
Yeah.
I don't know what my favorite track that I brought was. It's probably either that or the Golf Force track. But my favorite track that you brought is the one that we're closing out with.
How could it not be? So to close out the show, we're going to take a listen to the main theme from Light Force, which was released just sometime in 1986. This is basically just Rob Hubbard doing Rob Hubbard things on the Commodore 64, making it sound amazing for 7 minutes. And this is what I fucking love, dude. Back then, right? Like, we saw Martin Galways with Parallax and other things, Jochen Hippel on the Atari. Back then, these guys just would rip for 6, 7, 8, 9+ minutes, never looping, and just, oh, it's just like if, you know, like in the middle of a rock song, when the guitarist finally gets his moment and he just goes and the solo is like 7 minutes long. That's what this is. Yep. These guys are just going. And it's so impressive. Commodore in 1986 doing and sounding like this. It's so crazy, dude. And again, we've seen stuff like this. So it's like, I'm not blown away, but I'm still blown away each time I see stuff like this or hear stuff like this.
And Rob Hubbard was
a master.
He was one of the gods.
Yeah, master.
He was one of the masters. If there were a Mount Rushmore of C64 composers, he and Martin Galway would definitely 100% be on there. I'd probably put Daglish on there myself as well. And then
Galway and Hubbard, though, are undeniable. Like, you can't argue.
Undeniably,
those two.
Yeah. Those two. Yeah. No contest. This is just incredible, man. And the way that it evolves.
This was, we watched an oscilloscope video, which I know you love.
Oh yeah, yeah. We both love those.
Yeah, so cool to watch those channels and just how he manipulates them, dude. Especially the middle channel. How he manipulates these.
Yep,
just,
that's the noise channel, yeah. And how he makes it sound like a drum kit when it's just noise.
It's just
like,
noise.
You have to replicate the sound wave of the different drums when they're struck to make that sound. And I don't know how he did it. And then programming it into the computer. Just, it's mind-boggling to me what some of these guys were able to pull off.
This is,
and Barry, if you're still there, that's you as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Barry, freaking master at this too. Man, just again, just
had very kind words about Rob Hubbard as well.
Absolutely. Just watching this video again, though, like just the sound channels and the way it's just so impressive. And every time I listen to this, like I still hear the same things that I really love about this track, but I almost always hear something different just because there's so much stuff going on.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Very high note to play out on.
Yeah, make sure you stick around, right? Much like when we closed out with Martin Galway's Parallax a few weeks ago, some of these lengthier tracks at the end. This is so worth it. It's so good. And the ending is so good. These guys knew how to close these Commodore 64 tracks, dude. They always end so epic.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening and drop us some comments. Let us know what you thought of this episode. I know this was off the beaten path for us.
Well, damn, you're ready to go. You're wrapping this up. All right. Well, anything to plug?
I was just going to say, because, you know, I feel like a lot of the stuff we do, I don't know, Beach Mania doesn't really have a thing, except that we focus on, you know, a different topic.
Why do we need a thing?
It's a topical show, but yeah, there we go. But this is really different. You know, we don't bring this kind of stuff very often, and I am curious what people think of it. I want us to get comments on this episode. So that was my only shout out, is give us some comments.
Give us some comments. Let us know what you thought. And I think before this one posts, your second episode of BG Mania B-Sides will be available.
Oh, BG Mania B-Sides. Yeah,
that'll drop between the rare and this episode. So yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah. Then by now, people who are listening on the stream,
anyone that's
or whatever
up,
you call it, they know. Anyone who's caught up, Paranormasites, the Seven Mysteries of Hanjo. I was super excited about bringing those tracks. I only brought about half the soundtrack, and I mean, definitely go check out the rest of it. There are 19 tracks. I brought 10 on that episode, and then I brought the one that I brought on the best of, and it is my personal soundtrack of 2020.
I have not listened to that episode yet, but I'm excited to listen to it.
I'm excited for you to hear it too.
I'm actually waiting until it's basically time. I'm going to listen to it for the most part, pretty much the same time everybody else, but about an hour earlier than everybody else technically has access to it.
Yeah, so you can listen through and make sure I didn't, you know, screw up too much.
I don't need to make any edits. If you did, you did. Screw it. Still going to make it live however you did it.
There we go. I love how you say I don't need to make any edits and not, nah, man, I'm sure you didn't screw up. It's, yeah, if you did, you did.
But if you did, I don't give a shit. You screwed up. I screw up all the time. No big deal.
Oh, man. But it's been fun. I've been enjoying the B-sides. And we've got a little bit of a break between this and the next time I'm recording with you. And so I'm going to have time to put together another couple and keep them on the back burner for what we need. And I'm excited. The next two, I think, are also going to be really good. I have decided, at least for a little while, that I'm going to alternate bringing things I haven't brought to the show before and then some things from that Best of 2023 episode.
Okay.
Because a few of those soundtracks deserve
more
attention.
Yeah, you had mentioned you wanted to maybe kind of highlight a few of those. So, yeah, I think that's cool.
So, that's my tentative plan. And I already shouted out Shukapow at the beginning of the episode, so I don't have anything else, dude.
All right. Well, I think that'll unfortunately wrap us up then and bring us to the close of the show for this week. We do want to thank you for staying with us and listening to another episode of BG Mania, made possible, of course, by RPG Era. If you like video game music, and more importantly, you like us and you want to help us grow the show, check the description box for ways you can do just that, including a link to join our Discord community. Click it. Join it and interact with us. Taking us out of the show today, we're going to be taking a listen once again to the main theme from Light Force, released sometime in 1986, composed by Rob Hubbard. Stick around for the full thing. Keep the music playing and keep it loud.
Bye. We'll be right back.